Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Welcome, everybody, to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you. This show is taking almost a year, I think, in planning, and because our guest hails from England, and he finally came out to the West Coast. He's been to America before, but on the East Coast. And we were able to snag him and get him in the studio. And we're going to take a look at his newest album. My guest is Mark Barnwell, and he's an incredible guitar player. And this new album, Mandela, is kind of interesting because he's got a bunch of people playing on it. And some of my best friends are on it, namely Incendio. They're on here. And I have, as my guest host, I think it's all of Incendio here, Jim Stubblefield, J.P. Duran, and Lisa Carbe. So, to start it off, welcome, Mark, to the show.
Thank you, Jeff.
And I'm going to play a clip, the opening song, to kind of give you a feel of what this album's about. It's a very interesting mix of styles and techniques, and with everybody on it involved in the project, it really is a very versatile album. So we're going to take a listen to the opening song. It's called Tierra de Juego. And take a listen, and this is Mark Barnwell. Mark, it's really a pleasure and honor to have you on the show. And this is a killer album. This is great. I just want to mention, too, on that song, Lisa's playing bass, if I'm correct.
I am, yes.
Now, before we get into the album real quick, I just want to get a little bit about your background, your influences, and, you know, how you got to where you are now. Because I think it's important. Because listening to these guys, JP and Lisa and Jim Stubblefield and some of the other, which I call the new classical flamenco artists that I've had on the show. Each of you guys have like this little stylistic niche that you guys have, but you all blend well together. But I want to kind of get a feel of where you're coming from.
Okay, well, I've been playing guitar since I was about 7 or 8 years old. I came home from school one day. My mum said to me, would you like to learn to play the recorder, Mark? And I said, no, I want to learn to play the guitar. So a week later, I was having classical guitar lessons, and I did that, and I got up to grade 5 on classical guitar. Then I became a teenager, and when you become a teenager, you just have to go for the rock guitar things. Mm-hmm. So I did that till I was about 30 years old, I think, late 20s anyway. Mm-hmm. Did the rock stuff, and then in Cornwall, which is where I live, I saw this guy doing flamenco in around about 2000, and I said to him, "Hey, this is really, really great stuff." And I thought, wait a minute, I like this. It's more exciting than classical, and you can improvise a little bit. So this was a guy called John Selfield, mm-hmm. and I asked him if he could give me lessons, which he did. And I did that had lessons with him for about 6 months, videoed it all, went home, studied it, and kind of learned to play a bit of flamenco stuff. Went out, started doing gigs, and that at the time it was just all solo finger-picking type acoustic mm-hmm. stuff. And then back in 2003, I think, or 4, I'd been doing it for a few years, and there's a little village nearby called Lou. It's about 9 miles down the road in Cornwall, and they had one of those old turning turnstiles where you could have a selection of CDs, and you could put on the headphones and pick a CD. Mm-hmm. So there was a yellow CD there with this kind of elaborate fiery guitar on it, and I thought, oh, that looks exciting. Let's have a listen to this and see what it is. And I was listening to it, and yeah, this is really good stuff. There's some really fiery guitar music on here. It's nothing like I've ever heard before in my life. But yeah, this is great. I'm going to buy it. It was a band called Incendio.
Oh, wow.
So I took this CD home and thought, wow, you can... I was quite kind of musically naive and thought, wow, you can actually use a pick with Spanish guitar. This is really cool. Mm-hmm. So that started me on a new type of music. So I started experimenting and doing backing tracks and playing different styles of music. So yeah, my influences are Incendio, I first discovered, and since then also Jesse Cook, Strunz and Farrar, and Johannes Lindstedt, people like that. Mm-hmm.
But all of you guys, and I've heard this from Jim and JP and Dan Sistos and Luis Villegas, they all had a definite rock influence,
yes.
or fusion influence, I think, in Jim's case. What were your rock influences? Because it does affect your playing.
Yes, I spent many years playing in rock bands. And, yeah, the early years, when I first started learning electric, I was quite into Hank Marvin. Mm-hmm. And he's got a great sense of melody, which I think I've always, tried to maintain how important good melody is. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. then after that, I kind of got into heavier things. First band, one of the early bands I was in, we're doing Deep Purple and Whitesnake and AC/DC and that kind of stuff.
Okay, so you have a pretty heavy hard rock background.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is interesting because all you guys have like a hard rock background, and it definitely influences the sound. I hear it, I mean, myself. And also, too, I think that, like you said, The new era of classical and flamenco uses whatever devices are needed to make the sound or the melody. So whether you use pick or fingers, I see that. Whereas in the old days, it was much more traditional.
Yeah,
but I think
absolutely.
It's good. You break the rules. That's what it's about.
Yeah, the first track you just played, the main theme and riff in that is all finger picking, but the solos are use a pick.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
mm-hmm.
a bit of both.
Now, the... one of the things that we were talking about a little bit before the show, waiting to do the show, was you were saying about the music scene over in England.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you were able to get flamenco lessons, but was that difficult to find somebody that was able to...
I think it was difficult. There's only... This was this guy called John, and I think he was pretty much the only guy in Cornwall doing flamenco at the time. He was doing solo flamenco mm-hmm. music, and it's quite a... Cornwall's a lovely place, but it's not the most advanced place in the world musically. So,
right. But I mean, in England in general, is there a lot of classical? I mean, people listening to classical guitar and flamenco guitar.
I think in London there's a fair amount of it, but where I live in Cornwall is about 5 hours away from London, so it's quite mm-hmm. remote. But yeah, John, the guy who taught me, he was playing sort of flamenco around, you know, the area for a while. Mm-hmm. But then he almost virtually gave up because he's the coach for the England Olympic fencing team. Mm-hmm. So he's traveling around the world doing fencing coaching now. He was in Rio a few weeks ago.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. And then guitars. Was it hard to find a good guitar out there?
Yes, it is, yeah. In the Southwest, certainly where I live, you're quite limited to Yamahas and Takaminis and like the, you know, nice guitars, but not very high-end. And I've been looking for a Pedro Maldonado or something of that caliber for a while, and it's very, very hard to get in England.
Yeah.
You have to go to, like, Spain or America to get them.
Well, in England, are there a lot of luthiers, or is it kind of... I know that, like, here in Southern California or even in Florida, where there are several luthiers, the warmer climate makes it easier to build guitars. Mm. I know one guy that's a guitar builder, mainly electrics, but he lives up north now. He moved up north, and he said it's very difficult because it's so cold and the moisture, it makes it difficult. But are there guitar makers?
There are a few in the south in England, but all the guitars, pretty much all the guitars I own, were the handmade ones were made in Spain.
Oh, okay.
And people have imported them into the UK.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Mandala and how you did this. It's interesting because this album, you had people, you sent files, like Lisa and JP recorded here, and then they sent the files back. How were you able to keep the vibe of it? Because one of the things that I've always found with overdubbing, especially when you're not in the room with somebody, is to keep the feel. But it's obvious there's a definite vibe and feel to the song. This last one with Lisa's bass playing is great anyway, but I mean, it's tight and it works. It's not just mechanical. Yeah, did you find that to be difficult?
What I did, first of all, was when I was writing the tracks, I'd write the tracks, and of course, in order to play my guitar parts, I'd need some sort of percussion. So I'd either sort of get a rough groove by playing percussion myself. I'm no great percussionist, but I can, you know, keep a beat. So sometimes I'd do that, or sometimes I'd look to sample libraries, which had a similar groove to the one I wanted, and lay down something which was an approximation of the end result. I play the guitar parts and get all the rhythm guitar done, all the lead guitar. Then I'd send it over to whoever was playing percussion on that track, either Brian or Ramon, and they'd record their percussion parts. And then once that was done, I'd send it over to Lisa.
Okay.
So she was the last person to lay down her parts.
Brian is, if I'm correct, he's in Nashville?
Yes.
He's in Nashville. And then where's Ramon at?
Where's Ramon, Jim?
He's in Pasadena.
Oh, so he's not
traveling with J-Lo or David Sanborn.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, or Santana or Christina.
Yeah, and I know. Yeah, he's
in the number of people.
So everybody pretty much was, you had everybody, you had files sent in and sent files out.
Yes, yeah, that's correct. Yeah, did all that via Dropbox.
And, well, I'm going to play another clip, and this one, since you mentioned your. One of your early influences, Incendio. The name of this clip is Incendio, and it's got everybody in here. JP, Jim, and Lisa are on this too.
Yep.
So let me play the clip, and then you can tell me a little bit about how that was put together and stuff. So here is the Incendio clip. Now, I think that clip, I played a good chunk of it, and it's a long, it's a longer song, and but I think it shows a little bit of the interplay there, and that is basically you and Jim Stubblefield playing.
Yes, the first half of the song is just me and Jim.
Okay.
And it was originally just going to be Jim playing on it, because I didn't really know JP too well at the time, a couple of years ago. And but I really wanted to kind of give it the sort of the X factor on the second part of the song, where it goes up a key. So I thought, hey, let's get JP in on the second half of the song, and the three of us will be mm-hmm. interplaying solos, and that really works.
No, it works well, and the vibe, it's tight. The section is tight. Now, let me throw out to all of you guys, to Incendio out here, was that tough to do? Was that tough to get that to, I mean, or was it pretty straightforward? I know you guys overdub a lot, and you've done a lot of different things where you sync to click or whatever, but was it pretty straightforward?
Yeah, for me it was. Yeah, just figuring out exactly what Mark wanted, but I sent him a couple different ideas and then let him pick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't an issue. I just, you got a click there, you play to it.
But I mean, you're interacting with him, and there's double lead stuff. Did he write that? That was all written.
No, the end, that fast line at the end, I harmonized myself.
Oh, okay. Okay, so, but I mean, you do some interplay. Now, what did you give them? Just a general chart, or did you write it out?
On Incendio, that was, I think I gave Jim the melody line, because that has to be mm-hmm. fairly sort of similar for each one. But the solo sections for everyone was just, okay, here's a solo section. You're playing from, you know, bar 24 to bar 32 or whatever, and it's all yours. You take it.
Oh, okay. But I mean, did you give them like a general rhythm chart or something like that, or...? To give them a
The chord chart, yeah,
chord chart. Yeah. So it was pretty. It just shows how good you guys are in the studio, because that is just so tight. It's really, really, really tight. Let's talk a little bit about your recording of you and mm-hmm. your sound. And actually, we can throw this out how you did some of the stuff, because the way the guitars blend together, it's, you know, you got to remember, totally different studios, mm-hmm. totally different places, but it blends really well.
Yeah, I think that's possibly, I think everyone's sort of always changing their gear and trying to get a sound they're happy with. And I did actually get some new microphones for this Mandana album, and they're Audio Technica, the AT4050. Mm-hmm. And I think Jim uses the AT4035. That's right, Jim.
JP and Lisa would know, because AKG?
I use
the Sheps now. I use it on our Christmas record.
Yeah.
Sheps, and well, what did you use on your tracks on this, though? Was it the Sheps?
I used just the mono mic. I didn't even have the Sheps yet.
No, I think it was the AT4035, wasn't it?
But into 4033.
4033.
But into a Manly, right? Yeah. Your second pass into a Manly.
So I think both using Audio Technica mics probably helps the sound quite, you know, in the same ballpark for both guitars. Mm-hmm.
And then you were using the 4050. What was your preamp?
And I use a Focusrite preamp for that.
Focusrite. And then you guys use the Manly?
Jim uses the Manly. We typically use 737, Avalon 737, but we also occasionally use the pre's that are in Motu Mark II that have been upgraded by Black Lion Audio mm-hmm. in Chicago. We love the guys at Black Lion.
Yeah.
They make great, great kind of upgrade paths mm-hmm. For that. So we tend to alternate depending on a little woolier, more vintagey sound. We'll go with the Avalon. If we want something that's a little more direct, we'll go with the Motu.
No, it's amazing. And I know also, too, a lot of it, too, is the genius of Bo. He's a great mixer to get. But, I mean, the sound blends really well, and it's really – it's not like something's radically different sounding. You know, the guitars have a general they're generally in the same, you know, same ballpark.
Yeah, they gel quite well.
So I'm trying to figure out how to describe.
Mark, do you have hardwood floors in your room for recording or carpet?
No, I've got carpet in my room.
Yeah, and JP and Lisa, what did you guys have for the guitars?
Carpet as well.
And I have hardwood floors. So yeah.
and did you guys? Let's throw it all the way around. How far was the mic from the guitars?
Who goes first?
Oh, probably 12 inches or something.
So it's pretty close. What about you?
Yeah, about a foot away.
So you keep it pretty close.
And yeah. we are relatively consistent, about 8 inches away from the 12th fret facing in toward the sound hole, but not on top of the sound hole because it's too bassy.
If we go mono, if we go stereo, then we put one closer to the 12th fret. And then
another bridge to get the stereo.
We just did.
Right. And all this was recorded. All the guitars are mono. Then you placed them where you wanted them.
Quite a few of the tracks I recorded stereo guitars.
To get
Tierra del Fuego to get a fuller sound for the guitar sound. So,
And then the bass was just direct, or did you use any type of preamp or anything on it?
Oh, yeah. I went through the Avalon. I usually go through the Avalon. I'm pretty sure that's what I did.
Yeah.
And then I used my MTD and just pretty much flat. Or maybe I boosted. I may have boosted some low mids. It just happens to sound really good on that bass.
Michael Tobias.
The new Michael Tobias, great, unbelievable bass.
It seems a lot of bass players really like the Avalon. Randy Tico did my last three solo albums, and he brought to my house an Avalon to play his bass through.
The 737 or like a little M5?
No, it was like a chunky rack mount.
Like a little box like this?
Not a little box. It was like this tall.
But was it wide like the...
No, it was a half rack.
Okay, so I think that's the M5, I think.
That's what we've been using.
Yeah, we have the M5 in England. It's a motorway.
But the MI6 is...
That doesn't exist,
right?
We can't talk about it, neither confirm or deny that. No.
Wrong radio show.
It says that you did fretless bass. Which bass did you use on that?
That is a Hanawinkle custom bass that we got several years ago from Pete, who makes great, great basses. Got a 5-string fretless, and I loved that sound, so I play around a lot with it. And he wanted it, so we give it a try, and he liked what I did, so that was cool.
That's very cool. And then... your relationship with Bo, did he come on board early or was after everything was recorded?
I'd recorded everything and I'd done some kind of rough approximations of the mixes, and then Jim introduced me to Bo, and Bo very kindly said he'd sort of help me out and fine-tune things a little bit via the internet. So he'd have a listen to a mix and he'd say, oh yeah, the guitars sound perfect, but the percussion, the reverb on the congas needs to be a bit darker, that kind of thing, and then it needs a bit less, bit of EQ cuts at 100 hertz, that sort of thing. So we kind of worked together online, and I'd send him some mixes, he'd send me a few ideas.
So you would mix some of it, show it to him, and go back and forth.
Yeah, and other little tweaks, like the two tracks with piano. I think you're going to play Mandala later, and I got the piano parts as MIDI, and he said, oh, let's run this through the 1967 jazz piano sound or whatever. And
he did a great job on that. Yeah, we'll play Mandela in a second since you mentioned it. But what are you using to record your tracks? I know that JP and Lisa and Jim use Motu.
I'm a PC guy still, haven't been converted.
So
I use a piece, really, really good piece of software called Reaper.
I didn't know you were using Reaper on all this.
Didn't you? Well, now you know.
I have a good friend is doing a project right now in Reaper.
I used to use Cubase for about 10 years, and I'd upgraded my PC, reinstalled Cubase, and I was having loads of latency issues and pops and clicks and things going wrong. And within about 1 week, randomly, three people I know had said to me, oh, you want to try Reaper? It's a really good bit of software. So I downloaded this sort of trial version and... Gave it a try, and after about 2 weeks I thought, wow, this is like way, way better than Cubase. It's so intuitive. You can store things in folders, and
does it have access to a lot of the, is it like VST plugins or something?
Yeah, all
like
the plugins are fine. Yeah, they all work.
So you can use anybody else's.
Yeah,
it's pretty universal.
Yeah, I use the Oxford Sonics plugins. I don't know if you've come across those, but they're really nice.
Now let me ask, since we're talking about the recording, just to get the whole picture, what guitars did you use?
For most tracks on this, I used a 1976 Manuel Conde Flamenco, which is really nice flamenco guitar. It's a full body guitar, but has a really nice recorded sound. And also, I've got a Cuenca 70F flamenco guitar, which I used for, I think, Pochka.
Cuenca, how do you spell that?
Cuenca.
And is that what you use live?
No, live is a completely different story. As these guys know, live, if most gigs, you need to sort of be resistant to background noise. So you need a guitar you can plug in. So I've got a Spanish guitar called a Camps, which I use for live, which is a cutaway. And it's got a nice it's a piezo and a mic blend system in it.
Okay.
And it's got acoustic foam inside it, so you can really pump up the mic without too much feedback.
Mm-hmm. Now, we know which bass you used. So what guitars did you use predominantly on the album?
The usual, the lovely beat-up Maldonado, 1999 Maldonado, that I love.
Okay.
And then what? I used on that... the two songs I'm on, I use the 2003 Pedro Maldonado Negra, which is the guitar that I'm loaning Mark for the radio show. He's actually sitting with that guitar. And
very nice it is, too. Can I take it home?
For the right price. Just real quick, when you say the Cuenca and the other, neither of those are cutaways.
No, they're not, no.
Okay, so you did it, yeah.
All of my guitar parts were done without cutaways, which was quite challenging at times.
Mm. Especially, yeah, he gets up there.
On the first Incendio, first and second, we used a lot of your Marcelino
Lopez?
Which also is not, it's like a 64, 65, and that is not a cutaway either. Mm. And it does present some challenge. Well, if you're going to go up that high, sometimes we do it for rhythm or whatever, but I think the Maldonados mostly carry the day.
Well, and Dan Sisto's made a really good point. He says, you know, a lot of guys will say, oh, why do you put a cutaway in? And, well, at least Dan's point of view is that if you're playing a non-cutaway nylon string, most of the people who play those are classical players, and a lot of those moves to get up high above that where the cutaway would be, those are rehearsed. They're playing repertoire. But if you're improvising and you're in the moment, you don't want to all of a sudden go down and hit a wall. And in fact, when I was over at Herman Vasquez Rubio's shop, I was playing a bunch of non-cutaways, and Dan Sistos and I were jamming back and forth, and I didn't have a cutaway, and I kept on playing lines, and I'm like, boom, dunk, I can't fit, you know. Eric Hansen just asked, he wants you to talk more about the foam inside your guitar.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's... I must mention my UK guitar amigo, Al Marconi, if he's listening now. Mm-hmm. He's up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I buy all my guitars off him because he buys guitars and he'll spend, like, maybe a few months getting them to perfection, and then he might sell them to me. So that's pretty good.
That's good.
But, the Camps, he spent a lot of time on that. It's nice kind of live guitar because it's got a truss rod, so you can get really low action on it, which is good if you're doing long gigs. Mm-hmm. And he got this special acoustic foam. You'll have to ask him whereabouts he got it from, but it's a special acoustic foam, and he cut it the exact shape of the guitar. And he's very, very kind of meticulous. So he did.
Does it fill the whole guitar?
Yes, it fills the entire guitar. Yeah, the entire inside of the guitar.
And what do you know? I mean, besides, I presume it's there to hinder feedback. But,
yes, that's right.
But did it change the sound of it?
The guitar is quite. It doesn't sound great if you're just playing it acoustically. But I never do that. But when it's plugged in through a PA, and you've got the blend of the mic and the piezo, then And I put that through a headway box, so you can separate out the two channels, put a bit of EQ on each one, and it sounds really, really nice through a PA.
The downside of that is if you're on tour with a guitar that has all that foam in it, it sounds amazing on stage, and they're saying, oh, can you play at the radio station acoustically before you go on, and the entire guitar is stuffed with foam.
I got nothing.
No, that's true. But also, too, like you were saying about the cutaway, today, for live performance, you can get a really full sound with the good pickups like Carlos Juan. And I mean, it's amazing how those pickups sound. And so you can actually, you don't need the full body. It resonates. You can get that resonance.
Lisa, what do you think? I mean, you studied classical in college. I mean, what do you think? Do you notice a difference between your Marcelino, a little more fuller body, having that extra wood, that extra little bit of wood?
Yeah.
But I mean, electrically, pickup.
It's so minimal electrically, and what you want to, if you're playing live, it's worth sacrificing that for the convenience and a myriad of other things.
Well, I want to throw out here too, and we've done several shows with Jim and JP and Lisa and their solo albums and stuff. These are some of the pickiest guys in terms of tone, and their setups that they've developed, their pedal board setups live, are one of the best. And they're one of the flattest and natural. They're constantly striving to get that natural sound. Now, speaking of that, do you use a pedal board? Do you have a whole system that you use like they do? Or do you?
No, most of my live gigs are single play solo. It's not quite in the same level of largeness of what Incendio sometimes do.
So you don't use a digital reverb?
No, so what I have I have my guitar. It goes out into my Headway preamp, and that separates out two single, the two channels into one channel. You can mix it on the preamp. Then I have a Fender Passport Pro 300 PA system, which has the most amazing built-in 24-bit reverb system. It's got an absolutely gorgeous sound, so I use the reverb built into that.
And that's how you just use that. You have it go gang into mono. You don't separate, because like Jim was using a Grace preamp that had two channels, and he would actually pull the two pickups and blend them.
Yeah, that's what I did with my Headway preamp. It's actually got stereo input.
Oh, okay.
So that takes in the stereo input. Then you've got two channels, the mic.
So you were going two channel out to the PA,
and then that goes down into one. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's very cool. That's a good system. That's you know. I can see in what you're saying because you're playing solo, right?
Yeah, if I was playing in a band, which has been amazing, I've played with Incendio on Friday and Saturday last week, and yeah, that's a different system.
Well, so you played with Incendio. How was that playing with that? What would you need a pedal board for?
Yes, yeah, so fortunately, Lisa had a spare guitar and a spare pedal board she could lend me. So
right.
Which had the reverb and the Fishman Aura and the, the EQ. Yeah, and that was, I got a really nice sound out. And I used the Alvarez Flamenco cutaway. Mm-hmm. And I got a really nice sound out of that. I think that blended well with the guys.
Oh, that
he sounded great.
I'm sure. But I mean, in terms of the demands, how did you see? I mean, okay, when you're playing by yourself, I would think that you really got to be full because it's just you. But now you're in a band with two other guitar players. How did you approach that, or what did you discover?
I think we did about seven numbers together. Did the whole second set, and I did a bit of homework in the UK, and you know, made some notes on what chords were there, and all the solos were improvised. But you just have to be very organic about it and learn to kind of look at each other, find out what's going on. JP will sort of point to me, and that's my cue for, hey, it's my solo. And then I'll finish it and point to Jim, and it's his turn for a solo. So you've just got to listen to what's going on around you and work with that.
Okay. Well, let me play. I'm going to play Mandela, the title track, right now. And then I want to talk a little more about this interaction and you utilizing your your technique, playing in the studio as opposed to playing live. So let's take a listen to Mandela. Now, that blows me away that you were saying about the that piano sound that he got from that's electric, that, because that does sound acoustic. Yeah, that, I can almost feel the room.
I know, he just emailed me a MIDI piano part, and
That's amazing.
And Bo did the processing on that. He run it through one of his piano simulators,
and that's Chris McGrath.
Yes, that's right.
McGrath, yeah. Brian Brock on percussion, JP on bass. Yeah. That's the fretless.
That's the fretless straight into Avalon.
And Judy Whitlock on flute. And it's interesting. There's a couple of pieces where you have that, where you do, like, you know, you answer and you interact with the flute. In mm-hmm. this case, it's with the flute and the piano. But and then at the end, that, well, I asked him off, well, we were off mic, but I asked him because it sounded to me like a 12 string, but that's a bouzouki.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a bouzouki. Very cool sound. Again, a lot of tonal colors, very nice mm-hmm. colors, and it really brings the song out. But now what I want to ask you about is, like, okay, there's some pretty, we'll just use Mandela mm-hmm. as an example, mm-hmm. because you're playing some really lyrical, you know, legato piece mm-hmm. Melodies, and then you're moving around pretty fast. Mm-hmm. Now, in a live situation, like with Incendio, where there's a lot of sound coming out from the band, mm-hmm. Is your technique change playing, like trying to get all those notes? Because, like, for example, with Jim, I think, was born live. I mean, he has a good aggressive technique in it. He articulates his leads, and, well, JP too. But they both cut, and it's mm-hmm. clear. Was that difficult? Because, you know, you're playing kind of in the studio, you're more controlled, and it's, you know, it's out there live. You gotta play the fast stuff,
yeah,
and absolutely. Articulate it, but mm-hmm. you got to cut. So it does affect your. I would think it would affect your playing.
Yeah, I think in a live situation, I do like an acoustic set, and also then a set with backing tracks, mm-hmm. So I can do my own music. And yeah, live it is quite different because there's the what type of gig it is, the audience, the adrenaline, and how you're feeling that day. So sometimes a lot of my solos are improvised. So
right.
quite often something different will come out and. And I might be playing quite fiery one night and quite laid back another night. So.
Is it hard? You have to play harder, or do you, I mean, in terms to, because I'm not talking, because I know in England you're playing solo.
Yeah.
So that's another thing, because you have full control mm-hmm. of the Vaughn, because it's yeah. just you.
Yeah. But he is playing to tracks a lot of the time. There are backing tracks playing, going. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So you just have to get the volume set right so that you're, you know, not too loud and not too quiet, and you blend in well.
Oh, okay. Because it's just, I mean, again, your technique. There's a lot of. The clarity and articulation of the mm-hmm. notes, and that's not easy to do on a classical guitar.
Too. Yeah, I mean, live, it's probably not going to sound. There's not going to be quite as many dynamics as you get in the studio, but that's mm-hmm. that's the nature of mm-hmm. live gig, you know.
So, let's play. I'm going to play another clip, and I want to talk about this a little bit. I'm going to play just to kind of give you a feel. Of the different styles, and I want to talk a little about the Turkish influence, because this is called Sahara, and let me get the name right, Yanaki Ariza,
yeah.
Yanaki Ariza.
And he's listening now, so hi Yanaki,
and he's playing besides guitar, he plays Turkish
saz. Yes.
What is that?
It's a traditional Turkish instrument with a very long neck.
Oh, okay. How many strings?
I'm not sure, actually. Yanaki, maybe you can Facebook Jim on how many strings it's got.
Well, let me play the...
I will Wikipedia it.
Yeah.
Or somebody in chat can find out how many strings the saz has. How about that?
But listen to this thing. It has like it's a definite mood piece, and it just gets it really... I mean, it's an interesting piece, but I love the feel of it. This is Sahara. just takes you into another world. I mean, it's very cool. Just so everybody knows who's playing what, Mark's playing the guitars and the fretless Spanish guitar. I never heard of a fretless.
Yes, that's in this latter half of the song, yeah.
Okay. But
it's basically a Spanish guitar with the frets.
And then you get the keyboards. It's called an unfinished guitar is what it is.
Okay. And then Jonathan Stromberg's on violin. And yeah, I love the interplay between
the
guys.
Yeah, he's great. I met him in a tapas bar in Plymouth, and we got chatting, and he was dancing some Argentinian tango to my music, and then I found out he played violin, and he plays for the Plymouth Symphony Orchestra, and so I said, "Oh,
he's a great violinist."
You know what? If I might get a quick shout out to what we're talking about, because the beautiful thing about being in San Diego and doing this kind of music is we're getting to meet people like Mark and interacting. And on the East Coast, we're able to interact with our friends Victor and Eric
and Yannicky,
who Jim gets to work with. And when we were in New York in January, we were doing this booking thing, and Yannicky came up to visit us. And another friend had a harp.
Victor Tassarov was there as well.
Victor Tassarov was there. And there was a harp there, and Victor and Yannicky started to play it. I'm like, wow, you're really good. How long have you been playing harp? Know nothing about this. He goes, I've never played one. I've never really seen one. I had the opportunity to play one. So he was just pulling out this beautiful harp music. The only person I've ever seen do something like that, where they just went up the instrument and started doing it, is actually our august host, Jeff Floro, who's quite a harpist. So that's a shout out to Yannick, who's just incredibly talented guy.
I think it was similar with the Turkish saz. I think he just found one in the attic and, hey, how do you play this? Oh, okay.
Or like in the street. He's the kind of person that would run across a drum set and sound like Steve Gadd like in 3 days. Like,
well, let me explain to Mark what you just said really quick, because when JP was younger, I used to be able to get him into the NAMM show, because I used to go to the NAMM show all the time. And I remember trying to explain that to his parents, which was like, they're looking at me like, what is NAMM? This sounds, you're selling my kids to slavery. I don't know what you're doing. But anyway, they would go down there. And so we're walking around, and they're looking at all the guitars. And in those days, everybody was in the main room. So I would always go and play the Bösendorfer. That's $100,000, because they just love hearing a great piano. But I was walking, and they were overlooking at the guitar. Hey, look at those guitars over there. And right next to them were these harps.
Beautiful harps.
So they're like, where'd Jeff go? And I was just like testing out the harps, because that's the only place you get to play them. You know, so I'm sitting there doing glisses. I'm not a true harpist. I mean, I couldn't play virtuoso stuff, but I could do all the effects. And that's what he's
talking
about.
Look, it's a swarthy Italian angel. How is that?
Now, the fun part was when we'd go by Ludwig Percussion, and they had the timpanis. Mm-hmm. And if anybody was walking by, I would just boom, boom. Boom, boom, boom. And he just looked at like, you're nuts. And people would like kind of look around.
And I really still look at him like that.
Yeah, they do. But anyway, it's I just love the way that piece came together. And it's a total mood. Well, let's talk a little bit about your influences there, because that Turkish influence, that Eastern, Middle Eastern influence, the scales and stuff, where, you know, can you break that down a little bit? Is that kind of?
Well, I like to do a fair bit of traveling, and it's being in the UK, it's quite easy to go kind of east or south. And yeah, I've been to a few kind of like Morocco and Turkey and places like that, and I just love being there, the culture, the influence, and the music. And I'm naturally drawn to that kind of Middle Eastern vibe of music.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, if you've been like in Morocco, is there a guitar scene in? Have you seen a guitar scene there, or is there
not so much in Morocco? It's mostly the oud they use in Morocco. Mm-hmm. So, it's which is good. It's more traditional to the sort of Berber type music.
Well, that piece, can you describe how? Because they use a certain type of scale, right? Can you demonstrate that type of scale? How? What is the typical of that type of?
Yeah, I mean, for the introduction of Sahara, I mean, most of that between myself and Jonathan on violin, that was all improvised. But I just kind of have a play around with things that. That kind of thing.
Okay, because it's an interesting scale,
yeah.
And harmonically, it's an interesting harmonically it's different to my ear. Mm. Being Americanized, and you know, I'm like, wait a minute, it's not blues. What the hell? No, but no. Anyway, that's. I just think that the color, and I just want to mention that there's a lot of different things on this album that really, a lot of different styles. He mixes a lot of things. I want to play one clip that Mark, because we're running out of time, that Mark had recommended. This is with Jim on it, and it's called Moroccan Skies. Let me play this little clip, and you can just give us a little talk about that. Quick question: those arpeggios that you're doing, they sound very harp-like. Are you playing? Do you move your hand up when you're picking? Do you go up towards the sound hole? Do you move around a lot, or do you stay?
Yeah,
pretty much
I think those arpeggio parts. There's about three different arpeggios going on at once there.
So I'm one of them. That real high thing sounds like a harp. I wouldn't.
No, that's actually a guitar, but just really high up.
Yeah. Right. It gets a really and this is the and also too the double leads is Jim.
Yeah, myself and Jim.
Lisa, if you got to listen to the background, we were listening. Mark was pointing it out to me. Listen to what Lisa's doing in the background when you buy the album, because she's doing some cool little riffs in there.
She's
very subtle, but she's like.
I think she's playing two bass parts on that track.
Is that two tracks?
Yeah, because I wanted to give the really low notes, but I kept hearing some high parts as well, so I sent him both and let him mix them if he wanted. I suggested, but I didn't know what he was going to do. But yeah, I liked the way it came out.
Yeah, and well, now I know. So if I'm trying to figure out the bass part, I'm like, how did she do that?
Yeah, so it's two basses.
She must have a 10-string or something.
Incredible stretch there.
Yeah, that's like really...
What the hell is she doing that?
Well...
Eric Hansen really likes this song.
It's a great song. I mean, all of the stuff is really, really good. And I recommend you get this. It's called Mandela.
I'll just quickly tell you about the lead part on that.
Oh, yes,
that was really
interesting.
The sort of main melody, which goes... And I sent Jim his harmony parts to do, and it was really funny because he had the notes written down, but he ended up doing... So he put in an extra couple of notes. And I thought, he's done it wrong. And then I had a listen and I thought, actually, that sounds really cool. He's got it wrong, but he's got it right. So I re-recorded some of my parts to match what he'd done.
Mm-hmm. It works great. And again, the double leads are really tight. Mm. They're right on, spot on. And it blends really well. I mean, to me, it sounds like you're both in the same room when you were playing. I mean, that's just a testament to all your musicianship.
Well, I think we've been friends for quite a long. Jim had come to visit me in Cornwall last year in September. We got on like a house on fire, and I think there's kind of like a connection between us musically and spiritually.
Well, I told you we'd run out of time, so it's. I just want to thank you. The name of the album is Mandela. It's available everywhere. We can get it pretty much anywhere.
Can I say a quick few hellos to the UK? So my wife, Aelia, if she's listening, and also Omar and Mia, the cats, if they're listening. Owl might be listening, Tiggy might be listening, and I think Fiona's listening too. Hi to all you guys.
That's great. And this is a great album. I really recommend it. There's a lot of interesting things on it, and it's a textbook on... over the intercontinental recording, as I call it, where you go across the Atlantic with just files. I mean, this is amazing. And this is a lot of records. This is the new way to do records in some ways. And all the playing on here is just incredible. Jim, Lisa, JP. Let me shout out real quick. If you want more information on Mark, it's www.markbarnwell.com. For Jim Stubblefield, it's www.guitarexotica.com. And for JP and Lisa, it's www.carbeandandyduran.com. Do you want to play something to take us out?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you so much. And I expect you to be coming to L.A. often so that you can come hang with us. And that's another thing. I definitely have to do several more shows with you, but also the thing is when these guys are on, you got to come and hang with us. It's just a great time to have a bunch of guitarists in here.
And you know what? Thanks to a lot of guitar friends are listening. Eric Hansen out there is an amazing guitarist. David Correa up in Northern California with his CD, Hacienda, and everybody in between, all the people we mentioned. This is a really, really nice community thing that's happening. So thank you, Jeff. And thank you, Mark, for coming to visit us, man. It's been a blast.
Sure has. And it's not over yet.
Okay. So take us out, and then I'm going to cut our mic so we just hear the Audio Technica so we get the best sound.